Caffeinated Thoughts Podcast. Hi, this is Shane Vanderhart. Welcome to another episode. Today we have a very special podcast, two interviews. The first one is with Joe Walsh, former Congressman Joe Walsh, not the singer Joe Walsh. He is running for president against President Trump. Yes, it's a tall order, but he is asking Iowa's caucus goers, Republican caucus goers, to consider caucusing for him this coming Monday, which is February 3rd, our the first in the nation Iowa caucus, and it's hard to believe it's already upon us. Then Monday morning, I spoke with David Dix. He is running for Iowa's Republican National Committee Band, and you might be thinking, what is that? Well, we talk about that. We talk about the Iowa Republican caucus process, and David talks about why it's important for people to get out and caucus, even though we don't necessarily, yes, we do have a contested caucus with Joe Walsh and Donald Trump, as well as Bill Weld. But in the years past, when there's an incumbent president, generally it's not seen as competitive, so you don't have as many people participate. So he's saying you should get out and participate anyway, and he discusses why. He talks about why he should be Iowa's next Republican National Committee man. So stay tuned for both those things. Before we get to both of those interviews, first a word from our sponsor, American Principles Project.
At American Principles Project, we believe that human dignity should be at the heart of public policy. We work in all 50 states and in Washington, D.C., to promote life, religious freedom, local control over education, authentic economic progress for working Americans, and a return to constitutional principles such as federalism. Want to help American Principles Project? Visit our website today, AmericanPrinciplesProject.org. That's AmericanPrinciples, P-L-E-S, Project.org. Sign up for email updates. Help us out. We want to work with you. That's AmericanPrinciplesProject.org.
Without further ado, here's my conversation with former Congressman Joe Walsh, Republican candidate for President of the United States. Congressman Walsh, welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Podcast.
Hey, Shane, great to be with you, my friend.
So one thing I want to ask every candidate, whether they're running for state house on up to president, and I've been able to talk to a lot of candidates being here in Iowa. As you know, we trip yep. over presidential candidates here during caucus time. Why are you running for president?
I think Donald Trump is unfit. I think he's what our founding fathers feared. I had hoped for a year and a half that a better Republican than me would step up and challenge him. We have a president who fundamentally cannot tell the truth, and he fundamentally cannot put the country's interest ahead of his own. No other Republican stepped up, so right before Labor Day, I did.
Okay. All right. So I know some of my listeners are probably wondering, and just for full disclosure, I'm actually a registered independent, so I'm not going to be caucusing. First time I've never caucused in years. I used to be a Republican. But you know, most of my listeners, that's probably not the case. They're going to be caucusing as Republicans, and they're probably wanting to know, okay, who's this Joe guy, and is he more than just I don't like Trump?
Yeah, Shane, it's a great question, and it's a fair criticism of me because, look, because I'm running against Trump because I think he's a unique thing and he really is a danger to the country, I find that I'm always talking about Donald Trump. I disagree with him on plenty of issues, but I think, for instance, his tariffs are bad policy and they're hurting Iowa and farmers all over the country. But if I just had a problem with Trump's tariffs, I wouldn't be primarying him. I'm not primarying him because of any issues. I'm primarying him because of who he is. But now, who is Joe Walsh? Look, I'm a former conservative congressman. I was one of the most conservative members when I was in the House. What I often tell voters in Iowa is, Republicans, if you like some of the things Trump's done, well, I like some of the policies he's enacted. I just don't think the country can take four more years of his craziness and chaos. And what you'd get with a Joe Walsh presidency would be good, restrained, conservative policy without all the cruelty, without all the other Trump stuff.
Okay. So I was at your event in Polk City Friday, and you talked about an issue I'm not hearing any Republicans talk about, and that was climate change. And I want to push back. I want to push back a little bit on that. I think I see where you're coming from, but I would say that, well, let me pull up the quote because I want to make sure I don't misquote you.
And I haven't always been here, Shane. This is an issue I've kind of learned more about, but go ahead.
Okay. Basically, you said, so I want to apologize to you on behalf of my party because my party has been missing at the scene. We've got to get with everybody else and have a seat at the table because right now, the only people sitting at the tables to figure out what we're going to do about climate change and championing the environment are Democrats. Republicans are all over in that corner saying it's a hoax, it's a hoax, it's a hoax. Yeah. But you said basically so we get Trump out of the way. I guess my pushback would be is our opposition to climate change policy predates Trump.
Yes, and Shane, it's a great point. Look, I think that's right. And Republicans have generally been skeptical of climate change. And look, I was in conservative talk radio for 5 or 6 years, and I expressed some healthy skepticism over the years for this notion that, look, obviously climate change is real. It's a 4.5 billion year old planet. Of course, the planet gets hotter at times and colder at times. The question for us is, what's been man's impact on it? And I think that's what we all need to be honest about and look at. Here's the point I was making there, though. Okay. I've had enough private conversations with Republicans in the House and the Senate who understand a couple things, Shane. They know how this issue is hurting the Republicans politically. And if we don't acknowledge that it's real, we're going to lose young voters. And a lot of them have told me privately that, like me, the more they've looked into this issue, it is an issue we should explore. And we shouldn't, as Republicans, just say right at the get-go that it's a hoax and we're not even going to talk about it. I do think that once Trump's gone, I do think you'll see more Republican courage come to the fore and say, this is an issue we ought to talk about.
So if you were to be elected in a Walsh presidency, what kinds of policies do you think would be worth pursuing? So I'm going to go out on a limb and say you're not a fan of the Green New Deal.
No, not at all. Not at all. Okay. Not at all. And the bad thing, Shane, is because, look, there are radical people on both sides of this issue. On our side, you've got the radical folks who say it's a hoax. I'm not even going to talk about it. And then on the Democrat side, you've got the radical people like the Green New Deal people who say the world is going to end tomorrow. Now, the problem for us is that side is dominating the discussion because we don't even take part in the discussion. So, no, look, I don't want what the Green New Deal is, and I don't want what most Democrats want, which is we need massive government solutions right away to solve this problem. We got to get rid of fossil fuels, oil, and fracking tomorrow. Heck no, that's absolutely the wrong thing to do. This is the most innovative, entrepreneurial country in the history of the world. People outside of government can help figure out some things we need to do. But I don't want the Green New Deal and that radical stuff to dominate the conversation.
Right. Okay. So another thing, you mentioned illegal immigration, and that has to be a topic that I'm frustrated with because either side seems to want to or have any interest in talking about how we can compromise and come to a solution that's a bipartisan solution. So you said some interesting things on Friday about that. I just wanted to see if you'd recap.
Look, I'm an immigration hawk. I was talking about the border way before Trump got elected. And when I was in Congress, this was a big issue for me. And I do believe this is the issue that got Trump elected because most Americans know it's just unfair and wrong and costly for people to be able to enter our country illegally. So step one is, you know, we have to secure, if we're going to have borders, we've got to secure them. That's where everything's got to start. And then once we get that set and in place, and that's partly, Shane, a wall, but it's not just a wall. That's why Trump's just so stupid. All he talks about is the wall, the wall, the wall. That's only part of it. There's so much more we can do along the border. But then once we've got that figured out, then we've got to be honest. We've got anywhere from 12 to 22 million people who are in this country illegally. We've got to figure out who they are. There are different classes of these people, and we've got to come, as you just mentioned, both sides got to give a little and figure out how to handle that problem. It's an issue that I would want to lead on.
Okay. So, you know, things like, hey, Republicans, you maybe need to let's not punish children of illegal immigrants.
Amen, Shane.
Yeah, that's something that I've been, you know, as a Christian, it's like, why?
Yeah,
we've never had a society where we punish the children for the wrongdoing of the parents. So that's
Shane. Yeah, you're right, man. And that's an area where, like, I've got to give a little bit. As you mentioned, the children of people who came here, they need a permanent solution, and Republicans got to give on that.
Now, I did. Now, when President Obama tried implementing it by executive action, I opposed that.
Wrong.
Just because of the process. Yep. But Congress, if they want to do it, fine.
Yes.
But yet, and Democrats, they need to be concerned about border security because we do have a legitimate question. I'm all for immigrants, and I'm all for refugees even coming here. But let's come to lawful ports of entry.
Yes.
And not cross the border. Amen. So. All right, I think we solved this thing, Joe. So let's.
But so you know what, Shane? You and I know what the answer is. The problem is both political parties are scared to death to give a little, and they're going to have to.
Right. So what are some of the other issues you're concerned about as we look at 2020 and beyond?
The biggest issues, and I think the biggest issue staring at us, is that we're almost $24 trillion in debt, and neither political party wants to do anything about it. And the biggest driver of our debt is the fact that the American people are living longer and longer and longer, and that's a good thing, but the health care that is required to care for these Americans living longer and longer and longer is bankrupting this country. And I'm talking about our entitlement system, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, now Obamacare. We've got to have a real grown-up discussion on how we're going to pay for all of this health care, or this country will be bankrupted. This is one more issue, Shane, that both political parties, in this case primarily the Democrats, are afraid to talk about.
So what kind of policies would a Walsh administration pursue?
I think we have to change the whole discussion of healthcare. The reason healthcare is expensive, Shane, is because we don't have a real market. The vast majority of Americans don't pay for most of their healthcare costs. Somebody else pays for it. The government, your insurance company. And as long as that's the case, costs just keep going up. Somehow, we've got to get to a place where the government is always there through Medicare and Medicaid to care for those people who cannot care for themselves. But the vast majority of Americans, Shane, need to pay for their own day-to-day health care costs. And the vast majority of Americans of means should have catastrophic care, which is what insurance was always designed to be. It should be looked at more like automobile insurance, Shane. When you and I go put gas in our car, we don't use insurance. When we go change our oil, we don't use automobile insurance. It's the exact opposite for health insurance. We use health insurance for everything. We've got to change that because it's driving up the cost. So I'd like to lead that discussion, because right now Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security are on the fast road to bankruptcy.
So ideally, maybe everybody has a catastrophic plan plus an HSA.
Yeah.
Okay.
Plus an HSA, a catastrophic plan. And, you know, again, then that would include, I think portability is really important when it comes to pre-existing conditions. So if you go from, you move from job to job, whatever, you've got a plan that's portable as well. But yeah, catastrophic in HSAs for most of us.
Okay. What to do about Social Security?
There are a couple easy fixes that just take political courage. We should raise the retirement age. We should raise the taxes on high income retirees, and we need to provide some sort of an option for people who want to begin to, you know, have a private option where they can save for their own retirement. I'm in my 50s, Shane, and I know George W. Bush, you know, brought this up a few years back, and he got slapped down, but still the vast majority of Americans younger than me don't think they'll ever see Social Security, and they probably won't. So we ought to provide an option where they can plan for their own retirement.
Right. I mean, if they take that money in their 20s and
bingo,
invest it now and don't touch it, I mean, they're definitely going to have a much better retirement nest egg than this, depending on
people
this,
should have on that, that option people
on that monthly that social, yeah on the monthly social security check
and yep.
You're raising the retirement age, just in my mind, makes sense as well, because
yep.
You know, with life expectancy increasing, it yeah. was never designed for people to be on as long as they've been on.
Absolutely.
Now, I know some pushback, I've gotten this from some Democratic friends when I brought up that, you know, this particular point is, well, what about people who are, you know, doing manual labor who can't physically work beyond the current retirement age?
There are ways that you can work with that and divvy up vis-a-vis different occupations how you handle the retirement age. So there are ways to work with that.
Okay, so. Looking at the, we just had the March for Life last year and marked the 47th anniversary of Roe v. Wade. What do you believe can be done to continue to advance a pro-life agenda at the national level?
It's a great question, Shane. I'm pro-life. I do not know what the answer is when it comes to this issue. I know that, and you asked about Washington and particular, what can Washington do about the life issue? Well, I don't know. If Washington all of a sudden said abortion nationwide is illegal, you'd have riots in the street. Half the country would riot. If Washington said all abortions are legal, you'd have riots in the street. Half the country would riot. So there's no Washington solution to this issue. Which is why I think, you know, that the temporary compromise is to, and maybe this is the way our founders would have designed it, leave it up to the states, push this issue back to the states. And for those of us who are pro-life, I think that we continue with education, and it, because the polling on this issue, Shane, is good. More and more Americans are becoming pro-life, especially mm-hmm. younger Americans. Yeah. And technology is changing this issue.
Well, ultimately, if Roe v. Wade is struck down, that's what would happen, right? Just go back to the states. So speaking of Roe v. Wade, and, you know, it made me think of Supreme Court and judges.
Yeah.
One of the primary things that conservatives and Republicans have appreciated about President Trump are the judges. What kind of a judicial temperament would you look for if you were president?
Well, the same. And again, this is the beauty about Trump. Trump really doesn't care about anything. So he doesn't care about judges. So he farmed that out to Mitch McConnell and the Federalist Society. So they picked good judges, and they'd pick judges that I would pick, strict constitutionalist constructionalists who would abide by the original intent of that's in our Constitution. Though not judges who would legislate from the bench. So a President Walsh would pick the same sorts of judges.
Okay. Moving on to foreign policy. How would you approach Iran? Because whoever's going to be the next president, we're going to still be dealing with Iran, obviously.
Yeah, a couple things. I've publicly said, and I believe it, I thought what Trump did when he assassinated that Soleimani, that bad guy, the Iranian general, I thought that was a stupid thing to do. Because I think that act is going that action is going to get more Americans killed, and it's going to just drag us more further into the Middle East. For my entire life, Shane, and I don't know how old you are, I'm probably older than you. For my entire life, we've been trying to remake the Middle East. I'm tired of America trying to fix and remake the Middle East. The Middle East needs to fix and remake themselves. Under a President Walsh, our troops actually would come home from Afghanistan. Our troops would come home from Syria and Iraq. We would begin to really get American troops out of that entire region. When it comes to Iran, look, the Iran deal, I did not approve of the Iran deal with Obama because it only addressed the nuke piece. It did not address the fact that Iran is the largest state sponsor of terror. I think that is as much a danger as Iran having a nuke. So that needs to be a new deal with Iran that includes that needs to be implemented immediately.
Okay. So how, you know, in terms of addressing terrorism, if you pull everybody out of the Middle East, what would your approach to the war on terror, you know, look like?
I guess the approach to the war on terror would be my foreign policy in general. And it kind of goes like this, Shane. I think America should have the biggest, baddest, and I mean baddest in a good sense. We should have the biggest, baddest military in the world. And there shouldn't be another country that can come close to us militarily. And the rest of the world should know that we have the biggest, strongest military. But we don't use it unless we have to. I don't want to remake countries. I don't want to invade countries and try to turn them into democracies. When it comes to terrorism, and there are 200 some Islamic terror organizations all over the world. They all should know that the United States has the biggest, strongest military in the world, and we will punch them and obliterate them if they do anything to us. I just think one of the reasons, Shane, that Islamic terror is such an issue and these terror organizations are such a problem when it comes to going after us and our interests is because we're all, again, we've been in that part of the world trying to put our own stamp on that part of the world. And all you gotta do, Shane, is look at this assassination of Soleimani. That's going to create thousands more Islamic terrorists who are going to want to kill Americans because we did that. I think if we got out of that part of the world and encouraged people to become, you know, democracies and people who want to be free, but let the Islamic and Arab world figure out and chart their own path, I think you'd see less anger among those groups toward Americans.
Okay. How would a Walsh presidency deal with Russia and Ukraine and basically in working with NATO? How would you be different than Trump? And how would you be different than a potential Democratic presidential candidate?
Yeah, that's a great question, Shane. Here's how I'd be different from Trump. I wouldn't bow down in front of dictators and tyrants. I wouldn't give big bear hugs to tyrants and dictators, and I wouldn't give the middle finger to our allies. I mean, think about what Donald Trump has done. He hugs the bad guys and he stiff arms the good guys, our allies. If Obama had gotten down on his knees in front of Kim Jong-un like Donald Trump did, conservatives would be beside themselves. If Obama had let Donald Trump or had let Putin drag him around on a leash like Trump lets Putin do to him, conservatives would have been irate. So yeah,
well,
go ahead.
Well, Obama did tell it wasn't Putin, but his predecessor that, hey, wait till my second term, I can be more flexible.
Yeah, yeah, but that to me, Shane, that was fine. That's just an American president saying, I got an election coming up. I got to be careful what I say. After the election, we'll work on some stuff. That's nowhere near Donald Trump literally acting like Vladimir Putin's puppet, which is what he's done. Donald Trump's made America weak. America has lost respect around the world from people we want to respect us because he's weak. He sides up to the bad guys in the world. And I actually think the problem is, again, all Donald Trump cares about is Donald Trump. So he's probably got business interests in Saudi Arabia and Turkey, which is why he coddles up to the bad guys. We can't do that.
Yeah. Speaking of NATO, you know, I brought up NATO. Yeah. And one of the things I may not necessarily agree with how President Trump is trying to do it, but I think one of his concerns that he's brought up with NATO is legitimate. And that's they're not spending enough on their own military. How do you think, what would be the better approach, you think, to get NATO members to actually take a little more ownership of military spending? That way, United States isn't, you know, footing a bigger chunk of the NATO bill.
It is an issue, Shane, and it's a legitimate issue. And I guess it's consistent with my view of the world in that I don't want America militarily out there, and I don't want other countries having to be so dependent upon us militarily. I get that. And so there's part of me that agrees with part of Trump's instinct that these NATO countries got to start defending themselves more. That's good, but NATO is also good. The alliance in principle is good. And I don't believe this president believes that. And I'll tell you what, nobody would love to see NATO broken up more than Putin. So it's a real concern.
Okay. Bringing it back home, and then we'll close out here. One of the things that I've been really concerned about when I see the rise of, or when I see the left tacking even further left, and I'm seeing more and more people being woke, and I'm seeing the conflict between the LGBTQ agenda and religious liberty. How would you navigate that as president?
It's a great question. You make a great point. The further crazy left the Democrats go, the easier it would be for a Joe Walsh or a Donald Trump to beat the Democrats in November. Look, this country was founded upon religious liberty, point blank, period. And I think generally Republicans need to lean into the idea that you can identify as whatever you want to identify. That's fine. You can be whatever you want to be, but you can't force me to go against my religious beliefs. It goes back, Shane, to like that the Colorado baker. A same-sex couple went into that Colorado baker. We're getting married. I want you to design and bake a cake for our wedding. We should live in a country where that couple has a right to get married, but that baker has a right to follow his religious principles and decline to make that cake. We don't live in that country right now. We've got lawsuits like this all over the country where Christian businessmen and women are being sued. And I think it's important as president to, again, I don't want Washington to necessarily solve this, but I want my president to use the bully pulpit to defend religious liberty, respectfully acknowledging that we live in a world where we do have people identifying however they want to identify, but respect my rights not to accept that.
Right. Well, and kind of piggybacking onto that, one of the things that, you know, we're seeing is we're seeing a whole spat of not obviously at the federal level, but, well, you do have the Equality Act that just passed the House.
All over the states.
Yeah. For instance, you got these transgender girls now entering women's sports. And I just read an article last week about a MMA fighter, transgender girl, got the Bravest Athlete of the Year award and actually broke a couple of opponents' skulls. Is that something, as president, would you point out? It's like, hey, can we exercise some common sense here?
Absolutely. Again, Shane, I think you and I are in the same place. I don't want to see a law coming out of Washington, but I want a president to express common sense. And right now, when it comes to the LGBTQ transgender movement, you've got a fringe aspect of that movement that is foisting their way of, it's like, not only do they just want to be free to do their thing, they want to force us to accept it. So my 16-year-old daughter has to share a shower with a transgender male in a high school. That shouldn't be the case at all.
Transgender female, technically.
Technically, whatever. But you and I know the point. Again, that transgender 16-year-old should have a right to privacy. But my 16-year-old female daughter should have a right to privacy as well. So there's been like this radical overreaction, and now we got to fight back and implement some common sense.
Okay. I promised your comms person only half hour, so my last question, and I'll let you give final word.
Thanks.
What's your favorite caffeinated drink? This is the Caffeinated Thoughts podcast, after all.
My routine, Shane, is usually 2 to 3 cups of black coffee every morning. And then late afternoon, I have a cappuccino, black coffee with some steamed milk, and that carries me through the evening. Hey, man, thank you. This has been great. And for anybody listening to us, if you're looking for a good conservative option for the Iowa caucuses without all the bull crap and all the Trump craziness, you'd get it with Joe Walsh. Our website is joewalsh.org.
All right. Well, hey, thank you so much for joining us, and best wishes. And it'll be interesting to see what happens caucus night. So take care.
Thanks, Shane.
Up next is my conversation with David Dix, who's running for Iowa's Republican National Committee man. Dave Dix, welcome to the Caffeinated Thoughts podcast.
Thank you. Good to be here. Appreciate you having me on.
Hey, good to have you on. So you want to challenge Steve Scheffler for Republican National Committee man. Why do you want to run for this position?
Yeah, there really are so many reasons. It's going to be difficult to really hone in on just a few, but I'm going to try to do that. I think the first of all, the motivation to be involved politically is kind of the first aspect to that. And it has everything to do with my desire to do what I believe is a good thing and helping make sure that we all do our part, myself being included in that, a sense of calling, a sense of knowing that as not only as an American, but as a man created in the image of God and a desire to do his will and follow his path in my life. And to do and to be that kind of person who is ready to stand and willing to put together something that I can do to use my gifts. I think that's a big part of it, and that includes my family. I don't think these are the sorts of endeavors that you get involved with lightly, because when you step up for anything. I ran for state house here in Iowa in 2010. When you put your name out there, when you put yourself out there, you really in many ways are kind of sticking your neck out there, and you're making yourself vulnerable to so many other things. And it can be a challenging and even a nerve-wracking thing. So you have to be really prepared for that and know why you're running. So my first and primary purpose in doing that is to help do everything that I can to ensure that we're maintaining the sort of things that I believe that our country was founded on, the United States of America, so that I can make sure that I am passing on to the best of my ability those freedoms and those rights that are God-given rights to my children. That's really the biggest reason that I'm running. There's not a bigger reason than that. I love my family, I love my friends, and I love this country. And that's the truly the biggest reason. That's not necessarily the political reason for it, but I have a sense of calling to this political endeavor for that reason primarily.
Before we get further into some of your reasoning for running, I don't want to make an assumption that my listeners understand what the Republican National Committee man position is. So would you give kind of a rundown of what that position is and what it entails?
Yeah, that's a great question. In fact, I'll be very honest with you. Very few people have really understood what the National Committee Man is. I've talked to a lot of people over the last several months, really even longer than that. And people were like, well, what is the National Committee Man? What does the National Committee Man do? Who elects the National Committee Man? I get those questions constantly. And it's a fundamental breakdown of educating the not only our people, but a fundamental breakdown of educating the Republican people and making sure that they're properly informed. And while I understand everybody has a level of responsibility that if they want to know something, they can go figure it out, or at least they should be able to try to. Now, the interesting thing is it's really difficult to find a job description of any kind, whether at the RNC or even at the state level. It's something I think should change. I think we should be educating people more about what our higher level positions are. But in essence, the national committee person, okay, there's a national committee man, there's a national committee woman, they mm-hmm. are representatives, okay? Just like a delegate is a representative. So as a delegate of my precinct going to the county party, I would be a representative. I represent my precinct, I represent the Republican Party, I represent those values and principles, I go to the convention, I vote on things, rules, and so on and so forth. There are committees, ideally, and so it's really a higher level picture of really what's a smaller level thing. It's like George Washington, when he was in Virginia, he became a delegate to the First Continental Congress so that they could mm-hmm. begin to put together the reasoning behind why they needed to take up arms against the British. He was a delegate. He was a representative. To make it really simple, the National Committeeman is just that. He is a representative. He's a representative for Iowa Republicans specifically. He doesn't represent all of Iowa. He represents Iowa Republicans, the state party, the Central Committee, to the Republican National Committee, where he would sit on a variety of committees, vote on a variety of things. Some of the primary tasks of a national committee person is to ensure that there is a really good caucus to convention process, make sure there's proper recruitment happening, make sure that they're working really diligently at protecting the really critical aspects of the platform. So they're a platform person putting platform information together. They're also an individual who's very, very, very focused, or should be very focused, on making sure that they're not only working hard to elect the president of the United States. Certainly that would be a very high responsibility, and nobody should be in that position if they aren't ready to stand up. I would say, hey, if you can't support a Republican for a particular reason, maybe you should, you know, step down. I'm not saying that's the case. I'm just saying that it's an important aspect, because we are seeking to gain majorities. We're seeking to make sure we elect people at those levels. But also, as a representative to the RNC, that individual is also a representative to Iowa on behalf of the RNC, and ought to be probably the hardest working person inside the Republican Party at the most intimate levels, i.e., at the precinct level. There should be a lot of activities going on. There should be some things happening. People should be being recruited. People need to be being talked to. People should be supported, not only financially, but supported with the efforts that you're putting in to finding out, hey, how can I help you get elected? What sort of things do you need? It's also another task, I believe, of the national committee person to ensure that they're making constant contact with the county parties, not just showing up and saying, hey, here's the latest report, but what can I do to help you? And what do you need to make sure that you are the most successful you can possibly be in your county party? And that's really kind of the tip of the iceberg, but that's in essence what the National Committee Man should be doing and is responsible for. They also do sit on the State Central Committee board, so they're at part of those meetings, cooperating with the state party and making sure that they're doing what's necessary to ensure a successful process for the Republican Party. And that means not just getting up and, you know, start going at the last minute, and last minute being a year and a half out. Day one, here's the thing, day one, after we reelect President Trump, day one, the next national committee person, and I believe that Iowa is in need of a next national committee man, that person ought to be working diligently to remember that, hey, you know what, this is the final term for our president. Who's going to be next? What sort of things need to be done? So the work begins day one, and the work doesn't mean just, you know, putting up a bunch of stuff on social media. It means grabbing a shovel, digging, getting down in the trenches, leading from the front, and making sure that the sort of things that are happening inside those precincts and above are really taking root. And so that's the sort of thing that I'll do.
So yeah, so nuts and bolts, just to boil it down for summarize what you just said here. Well, every state gets one Republican committee man and one Republican national committee woman, as well as the state party chair sits on the RNC as well. So Iowa gets three representatives to the Republican National Committee. The Republican National Committee also, they vote on who's going to be the next RNC chair as well, even though the president generally has a lot of sway. If the president's the member of the Republican Party anyway, has a lot of sway of who's the next RNC chair. But you go to the different quarterly meetings, you go to the convention, you go then again, as you said, you're on the state committee, central committee as well. So thanks for that summary, that recap, because I've talked with my wife and I've mentioned this position before. And she's like, what? What is that? You know, nobody really hears, unless you're tied in Republican politics, you don't really know what this position is. So, this position is decided on by at the state convention. Delegates at the state convention vote on that person. So, why is it for your purposes? What do people need to know going into this upcoming caucus week from today?
Yeah, it's a really important time frame between now and now. I have a committee of 10 individuals who have been tirelessly working behind the scenes along with me to kind of get prepared and ready to go. And this has been one of my priorities is to make sure that we're talking to folks so that they understand that, yeah, we don't have 16 presidential nominee or potential nominees that you're going to vote for at the caucuses. But it's really important for you to continue to be involved in that. And I think we need to do a better job of educating our Republican folks, conservative folks, on the important issue of the other reasons why they ought to be going to caucuses. It's such an important process that's in addition to a presidential caucus type thing, and that is making sure that you're having folks voted in, because one of the things that happens at the caucus is they also are going to elect two people out of each precinct to represent that precinct as a central committee member inside of that county. So between now and literally a week from now, it's really important for people to know that it's a good thing for you to go to your caucuses beyond just the presidential side of things, because there are going to be people who are voted in. Platform information is going to be talked about, so you can bring a plank to that and have it submitted. So if there's something in the platform that we have that somebody's interested in improving or making some changes, that's where the process begins. And it's a really important aspect of things, because the platform is essentially our decree of what we believe as Republicans, and it's really an important thing. So but ultimately, go ahead.
Oh yeah, I was just gonna say, but then they also send delegates to the county convention as well as district convention.
Yeah. Yeah, so there will be in my precinct, I'm in Bondurant 1, and every precinct is different. There is a formula based on the number of votes from the previous election to the governor. Don't know how those formulas work exactly. I know that in my precinct there are four delegates that will go, and every precinct's gonna have a different number. But that's really important, because once they're elected at their caucuses, then they represent mutually that particular precinct, and then they will go to the county convention, which I believe is about 5 weeks after that, and again represent that precinct. They'll be able to be part of a very important meeting, and their vote will count towards everything that is voted on at that particular place, so rules and platforms and all of that.
Yeah, but and those folks eventually send the state delegates or decide on who is going to represent the county at the district. Well, actually, I think county. Correct me if I'm wrong. County convention delegates pretty much get to be district convention delegates, right?
Not all of them. There are a certain number of delegates that will not get to move on. That too will get put on at the county convention. So only a certain number. I don't know what that number is, but a certain number will go to the district convention, and every single one of them that goes to the district convention is automatically in the state, which, by the way, there's also an alternate. So there are alternates that will get voted in as well, so that if the seats are not filled at the convention, those alternates will be there, those who show up, and they would then be able to fill those seats, so that there's always a certain number of voters that are there that can vote on those issues.
Okay, that's where I got mixed up. It's district that goes to state, not vice versa, or not the county to the district. Okay, gotcha. So, because one thing I'm actually not a registered Republican now, and this will be the first year I don't go to caucus since moving back to Iowa. But one thing that always amazed me, and we always tried to encourage, with the people that supported, the candidate I was particularly backing during presidential election years, is like, don't just vote for president and then leave. Now, there obviously would be less of a temptation to do that because while yes, there is a competitive caucus, I'm using that word competitive very loosely, in that President Trump does have challengers. But I think we all know what the end result of this nomination process is going to be, and that's going to be President Trump will be renominated as a Republican candidate for president. But after that vote, and Republicans, unlike Democrats, it's our caucus is actually kind of, that caucus is kind of boring, and then we just vote on a piece of paper and then they count them up. That's it. We don't move around the. I keep saying the royal we. I'm not a Republican anymore, but Republicans don't move around the room like Democrats do, and it's not quite as boisterous. But people, one thing back in 2008 that the Ron Paul people were very good at doing is reminding their supporters not to leave, and that's one of the reasons why the Ron Paul faction of the party actually ended up taking over all the leadership spots, because they stuck around and they said, hey, yeah, we want to be on the we want to be a delegate to the convention, we want to be a member of this county central committee party, or excuse me, central committee. So yeah, don't leave, hang around, volunteer. So just my plug in, if you're gonna caucus for Republicans, you want to make sure that you're part of the whole caucus to convention process.
Yeah, that's a great point. And not only that, but invite folks who you know in your precinct. I was in a meeting the other day, and we have started up a brand new Bondurant Republicans here. And there were a pretty good number of folks that showed up to that particular event. When I was speaking, I asked everybody there to show a raise of hands of anyone who could name 10 active, involved, excited Republicans inside of their own precinct. And I had maybe two people raise their hands. That's a problem. That needs to be fixed inside of our party. Those are the things we have a tendency as leadership to really focus on the big horizons and the big things and the big events and the big raised monies. We often forget about the little guys and gals in the precincts and getting out to them and saying, listen, you know what? You're important to us. Your voice matters, your opinion matters. And you know what? There's a lot of talent out there, a lot of folks who have great ideas. And one of the things that we need to be doing more of, and I'm going to be doing this as the national committeeman, is getting out to those places, getting to know those folks, and begin that process of inviting them in. It's a problem when there's 540 some odd people in a precinct and only a couple of people who are registered Republicans are actually getting involved in the process. And I'm not just talking about the mobilization side of it, where we're getting numbers. Numbers is one thing, but I'm talking about making sure that we're keeping the most precious things guarded and safe for those who will follow us, the issues of life and Second Amendment, If we're going to win that battle, it's not all going to happen on social media. It's not all going to happen over the airwaves. It's going to happen in living rooms. It's going to happen in coffee shops. It's going to happen by talking to people and having those passionate conversations saying, yes, we do believe in life at conception, and we're going to do everything in our precinct to make that happen. Those are the important issues, and that's the sort of thing that needs to change inside of our party big time, and it needs to happen now, and we need to have a focus on that. And the reason we need to have another individual as the national committeeman is for that reason alone, because on day one, once we reelect President Trump, those things have to be focused on. Unfortunately, those things have not been focused on for Iowa Republicans for the last 12 years. Shane, I'm going to make sure those things get focused on.
Sounds good. So tell our listeners a little bit about your background and what would make you a good candidate for this position.
Yeah, so a little bit about my background, to keep it short, because I can make it long. I am currently 48 years, going on 49, been married for 25 years to my wife, Tina. I have four children. They're adult children. I have two 18-year-olds right now in the house, but they're both moving on respectively with their futures. And I have a son who lives in Kansas City. He is a paramedic for the Kansas City Fire Department down there. He is engaged to get married here actually this coming May, so we're excited about that. I have a son who's also a Marine. He is a Embassy Marine Guard, MSG, currently in a very important country, far, far away from here. And so I have an incredible family, and I could probably spend the entire time just talking about how excited I am about them, and just what God has done to just bless me as a man and as a family. I grew up in Des Moines, Iowa. I graduated in 1989 from East High School. I moved away and decided I wanted to pursue a track in the missionary arena. I went to Mexico, where I lived with a Mexican family. Didn't speak a bit of Spanish whatsoever, was an incredibly frustrated individual for a number of months, and was ready to give up. But through a very, very good friend, a pastor, a youth pastor of mine, encouraged me, stick it out, don't give up, you'll get this language down, eventually just keep working at it. I stayed, and by God's grace, I learned, and I've become fluent in Spanish, so I'm capable of doing that. I then moved on from there to Moody Bible Institute in Chicago. I had 4 years of school there with a pastoral theology track, and was involved in a variety of ministries, involved in inner ministry, inner city ministries with gang ministries, which was an interesting thing. I served at the Cook County Jail as a minister to high offender inmates, was involved in a variety of other endeavors while I was there. I am now a businessman. I was in the construction trades for approximately 12 years. Most of that time I was a business owner. My wife and I started another business 4 years ago, and my income surpassed my construction income, and so I stopped doing the construction to do a event fundraising business that she and I actually do together. And those are really the sort of things that help qualify me to do these sort of things. I have been politically involved. I ran for office in 2010 as a state representative. I ran in a very, very difficult area where about 70%+ were registered Democrats. I ran as a Republican, of course.
You guys were living in Des Moines at that point, weren't you?
Yeah. So I'm sorry. I moved back to Des Moines. Thanks for pointing that out. I did move back to Des Moines in the year 2000. Ended up getting a job back here. Left Chicago. I'd been there for 10 years. And reestablished our roots. Been here ever since. Been in Bondurant for 15 years now, actually. So.
Okay. So as far as experience with political engagement, you've been a member of the county party.
That is correct. Yes. So I've been engaged really since, again, 2010. I have been a central committee member now for about 4 years. I served on the I was elected as the Polk County secretary. And so I served for 2 years as a secretary for Polk County. I decided not to run for another term so that I could alleviate myself and continue to be involved. And that's what I've done. I've been involved in a variety of fronts, helping the current administration at Polk County, and especially with regard to the caucus process.
Okay. Well, hey, thank you so much for your time, David. I appreciate it. And is there anything else you'd like to add before I let you go?
Well, thank you. First of all, thank you for having me on, Shane. I really appreciate it, giving me this opportunity to share with folks a little bit about me and my passion. And I just want people to know that I really believe that Iowans do want to have a new individual at the national committeeman level. It's time. It's a good time. I've had the question, is this really a good time? We're trying to reelect President Trump. And the reality is this, there's not a better time. There really, really, truly is not a better time. I'm going to do everything I possibly can to make sure that we reelect. I'm already doing that. In fact, I'm probably doing more at the grassroots level than my opponent to make that happen. I truly am. I'm working with the state. I'm working with the Trump Organization. I'm working locally. I'm working, obviously, on my campaign, so I'm working with other folks. I'm working directly with a number of folks who are running for legislator as well. So I'm very busy at the places where it matters most. But in addition to that, we have to remember that there are going to be 4 years served, and I'm pretty sure that my opponent is probably going to go ahead and hang it up after those 4 years. We need to have somebody that's dedicated, committed, and ready to have a vision to look forward with regard to who's going to be next, who's going to step in and run as the national committee person, I'm sorry, not national committee person, but as the president of the United States. We need to have a RNC member right here in Iowa, which is currently the first in the nation caucus status state, that's going to have boots on the ground, is going to have people properly integrated, properly cooperating and working together in every facet, and educating and training folks at the most basic levels day one, 4 years before that next election happens. And that's one of the big things that's going to separate, I believe, me from the current national committeeman. And I think I want people to know my passion and my desire to do that, and to know that I'm passionate about you and what you believe as a Republican. And I want to hear what you have to say and what you believe needs to happen between now and this next election and the following 4 years after that. So thank you very much for having me. I hope I have your support. I also want to mention you can go to my webpage, and it is empoweringiowarepublicans.com. You can go there and learn a little bit more about this run that I'm doing. And you're also welcome to contact me at dave@empoweringiowarepublicans.com.
All right. We'll be sure to include that link in the when I put the podcast up on the website as well. Hey, thank you so much for your time, and best wishes to you.
Thank you, Shane. A pleasure. Appreciate everything.
That concludes today's episode of the Caffeinated Thoughts podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you happen to be listening to this podcast somewhere other than on our website, please be sure to check out caffeinatedthoughts.com. That's caffeinatedthoughts.com. That's CAFFEINATED thoughts.com. Or you could just Google Caffeinated Thoughts and it'll show up at the top of your search screen. Also, be sure to listen to us using your favorite podcast app, whether that's Apple Podcasts. Please give us a 5-star rating. We would appreciate it. If you don't like what you hear, just forget I said anything. Also, you can listen to us on Spotify, on SoundCloud, on Stitcher, and on Google Play. If there's a podcast app we're missing, feel free to drop me a line at shane@caffeinatedthoughts.com, and I'll try to remedy that. Again, thank you so much for listening. I hope you guys have a great week. Take care, everybody. God bless.